My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, Bet Smarter, Beat the Books, download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, is Mike DeCourcy. We love having Mike on, typically to talk college hoops during college hoop season. He is a columnist for Sporting News, a Big Ten Network studio analyst on the Big Ten Network. We watch him all year long as Big Ten basketball fans. And we're not, Mike, having you on to talk about the anticipated big Indiana-USC Big Ten matchup next year, or Maryland-UCLA in a Big Ten matchup. That's going to be tough to get used to. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. But reached out to you to talk some Olympic hoops. I talked about this early in the show. I'm just curious as to what you thought when Jason Tatum was one of two players that didn't see the floor in the U.S. opening win over Serbia.
I wrote in the progress, I think it was during the finals, a column about how he needs to be acknowledged as one of America's great players and one of the world's great players, so one of the league's great players, instead of always picking him apart in the way that he often is by the television, not necessarily the game analysts, the studio analysts, but the people on the various debate shows and such. And he was a frequent target for them, and he's an extraordinary player. But in the context of this team, it makes sense. He doesn't really work on this team, because for him to be his best, now in 2021, when the U.S. took Kevin Durant, a relatively young team, Dame Lillard, and him, Dame really struggled at those Olympics. He just couldn't find it. And so they needed a secondary scorer, someone to step up when everybody was throwing their D at KD. And he made sense then. But on this team, which really doesn't need to say, okay, hey, Jay, go get us a bucket. They won't. That's not what this team is. I mean, this team has lots of guys who can score and lots of guys who don't need much more than a screen to be super dangerous. As great as Jason is, on this team, he would, and I'd have to look at it, but I'm going to guess he would probably rank as the seventh or eighth most dangerous three-point shooter. And that's not an insult, because the guys you're behind are Tyrese Halliburton, Steph Curry, who's the best shooter of all time, and Drew Holiday, who keeps shooting over 40 no matter what. And so it's not an insult. But
well, he's a better shooter than Drew Holiday.
In reality, I mean, like in these games, he's not, because Drew Holiday has consistently shot above 40%. Now, remember, you don't have to shoot from 23. In these games. I mean, you only have to shoot from about 21. It's a much right. closer shot. And so that makes a difference as well. You don't have to have the kind of range that certain players bring to the game in order to be an exceptional shooter in these Olympics. You just have to be able to make a 21 or so foot open shot. And Drew Holiday is, I criticized him yesterday for taking one early in the game while Serbia was on its run. I don't think Drew Holiday should ever be taking a transition three unless it's to take a 12-point lead to 15. It should never be to try to stop a 10-0 Serbia run. So that's not who he is. But at the end of that game yesterday, when they started to get really weary and started to leave guys like Drew open, boom, it started to go in. So I do think that, you know, my wife asked me yesterday at the end of the game, you know, why there was lots of time for that he'd given to Halliburton. She's a Pacers fan. We lived in Indy for 10 years. And I said, the thing is, like, when you're at that point, you don't want to be putting Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton, who are both all NBA, out and told to play in garbage time. It's an insult. It's more of an insult than them not even being on the floor.
You know, he's such an interesting, I mean, if you'd said to me 3 years ago, Jason Tatum is going to be one of those more polarizing and debated players, I would have said, really?
Yeah.
But I've talked a lot about him, and I've kind of been on the side that you identified, which is the picking apart a little bit, maybe too much. Look, he is a multi-time first-team All-NBA player. I always might put it in the context of, if you go back over the last 20 years, you've had to have a debated top five player on your roster to win a title. The 04 Pistons were the last team that didn't have a debatable top five player in the league on the roster. So if you don't have one of those players, you're not going to win at all. And I said going into the finals, you could debate that if Boston wins, they've got a top five player, but he wouldn't be in my top five, even though he's been a first-team All-NBA player. Why do you think he gets nitpicked as much as he does?
I think part of it is the fact that he is not what we typically want to see in a elite wing player. Although you'll see him dunk the ball every now and then because of his length, but he's not Dominique Wilkins. He's not flying above the rim to finish plays. That's what we usually expect. Doc.
He's not Anthony Edwards, like from that standpoint, today's players.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to Dr. J, and like, that's what we want to see in that player, and he's not that. And you know, to me, I look at him and I say, like, of the guys who are not dominant athletes at his position, he may be the most complete player that's ever played, because it's maybe him and Melo of guys that are at that position in that size range who are not above the rim guys. And, you know, he may debate, like
you
I said.
You kind of put Kawhi into that conversation, too.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Kawhi, to me, is almost like a power forward who plays at that wing spot. I mean, because he's always had that. So I guess you could put him into that position as well. But, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. And, you know, I think Kawhi didn't get that heat because he was, you know, he was not the primary player, although he became the primary player in the 2014 finals. He was not the glamour player. I mean, they still had Duncan and they still had Tony Parker, et cetera. And then when he won in Toronto, again, there was a lot of talk about other players being more glamorous. So he didn't get the attention. Plus, he was in Canada, which is one of the reasons why, you know, maybe he wasn't talked about as much as on American television as someone like Jason, who plays for one of the two or three showpiece franchises in the league.
Yeah. I certainly think that when they play South Sudan coming up, whatever night that is, tomorrow night or Wednesday night, he's going to play a bunch, don't you?
I don't know. I mean, because, like, they took Tyrese out of the rotation after he struggled for – he only got 7 minutes against South Sudan the first time around. And struggled to guard Carlick Jones. What's interesting is that he played 7 minutes, and Carlick Jones still got a triple-double. He didn't get it in just 7 minutes. So the guys that came in for him, like Derek White, they struggled just as much defensively with Carlick as Tyrese did, but Tyrese has paid the price for that. He was the hero of the Australia game, and he's never really gotten back into the rotation since South Sudan, and he's sat out now two full games, including the last exhibition, and most of the one before that. So I'm not totally sold that they'll change the rotation to make Jay happy. I think their focus is on winning gold. They have more wings now than when they started because KD is ready to go, obviously, after what he did yesterday. And so I'm not convinced that they will.
Talking to Mike DeCourcy, is Kevin Durant the greatest all-time USA Olympic / international competition player?
Yeah, if they win the gold, it's not even debatable. If they win this gold, it's not even debatable. And part of that is because of what he did in 21. I mean, when a lot of people were saying, man, I don't want to go to Japan and not be able to move around and play in front of nobody. And he stepped forward and said, no, I'm a baller. I'm playing. And I will respect Kevin. You know, he gets a lot of heat for the whole traded to the Warriors thing. Yep. And how that. But I'm telling you, what he did in 21, I always loved KD as a player, but that was, to me, that should be like the top of his resume now. I played when no one else wanted to, and I won us the gold. Not by himself. Like I said, Jason Tatum was huge in that tournament. Bam Adebayo did some good things. But if there's no KD, they don't even make the medal round. And so if he can follow that up with another gold, then it's beyond doubt.
You know, I love KD too. I think that when it's all said and done, if he doesn't get back to the finals at the very least with whomever he's playing with to finish up his career, he's 35, 36 years old, I think. The moment for him, and I know we're moving away from the Olympic conversation, will be the Milwaukee series when he was in Brooklyn with the toe on the line and a chance to, you know, when he went for 48 and 50 or whatever it was in the last two games or two out of the last three games. That was the opportunity for him to extend away from the shadow of Steph, Clay, Draymond, et cetera, and the Warriors. But he didn't get it done.
Yeah. It didn't, and that's understandable. But he has been, you know, sometimes you're at the mercy of where you get drafted to, and you know, a lot of people criticize LeBron for leaving Cleveland, and I covered all the drafts when LeBron was not always in person, but I was always writing about the draft when LeBron was in his Cleveland years. And, of course, I covered college hoops, so I knew who the guys were that were coming in. And they never did right by him. The Cleveland organization in that period was a disaster.
Right.
So he absolutely had every right to leave. But he's not forgiven for that. Although I certainly don't think he handled it great on the way out the door.
No, he didn't.
Thing. But, I mean, I totally understood. You know, he wanted to work with people who knew what they were doing. So he goes to work for Riles and Spoelstra. Yeah, he got it right.
Although he didn't like Spoelstra to begin with.
Well, Spoelstra then wasn't the guy he is now. I mean, he was still young and hadn't proven himself. And we didn't know at that stage that he would become one of the great coaches in the NBA. He's brilliant. But everybody was skeptical. Like, who is this guy? He hadn't much beyond a... you know, inside the NBA resume, no one knew. But eventually he proved himself with that team, and he's gone on to continue to prove himself as one of the great coaches. He'll probably be the Olympic coach in the next cycle with the way they do it. I'm not a fan of it being a career achievement award for NBA coaches. I don't think that's how it should work. I think that it should either be a college coach or someone that doesn't have any other jobs. I mentioned Jay Wright in the column about a year ago. I think he would be perfect for it, but apparently he doesn't even want to do that. But I think I think that it's hard to be able to coach 100 games in a season and then be ready to be at your tip-top shape in coaching these. Steve Kerr got out-coached in the World Cup last year by the guy at Germany who's never coached anywhere. But he did. He got out-coached in that game. And so I think that, you know, they should be trying to build this program up to what it was when Coach K and Jerry Colangelo were doing it, and I don't see the effort in that regard.
We're talking to Mike DeCourcy at TSN Mike on X on Twitter. You mentioned LeBron. I've talked a lot about this going back to maybe the middle of the season, end of the season, regular season. LeBron at 39 is doing things at a higher level than LeBron at 34. Do you agree? Certainly from a shooting standpoint. He's become a better shooter.
I think he had to in order to continue to be able to succeed, because although he's still, as he's shown a few times in these Olympics and the pre-Olympic games, he's still pretty dynamic. He's not what he was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. And so he has to be a better shooter. If he wasn't, he wouldn't be able to average 25 a game. And he probably wouldn't be able to average 7 or 8 assists, et cetera. He gets a lot of that because people have to honor him as a shooter. And then he can see the cutter or the post open or whatever it is when they're running at him. But he had to do that, just as Magic had to do that in order to become one of the 4 or 5 greatest players in history. He could have been among the best point guards with just his passing ability. But to stay at the level he wanted to be in the NBA, he had to become a great shooter. Never a pretty shooter, but a great shooter he was, at least a very good one. And that's why he was able to be, you know, one of those guys that you mentioned with Kareem and Magic and Michael and Russ and LeBron, et cetera.
That's why I love talking to you, because Magic Johnson, when they lost to the Celtics in 84 in the seventh game at Boston Garden, they were leaving him open. You know, Magic always had that set shot at 6'9", but he was not a consistent shooter at all, and he just got better. And when they came back and beat the Celtics in 85 and then again in 87, he was just a much better shooter. Yes, awkward, because it was a set shot that Magic shot. But there was no doubt that the 84 finals, and he already had 2 NBA titles at that point, his rookie year and in 82. But when they lost to the Celtics, it was a lot about his game, his shooting in big spots. People forget about that in talking about Magic Johnson. We are talking to Mike DeCourcy. So, who's the biggest threat to the U.S. on the men's side?
I think it's probably France because of the home crowd and because you've got a nearly impenetrable front line. I think that's a problem. But I think you got to watch out for Canada, too. Canada, it's the opposite, because Canada's front court, their center spot, is not great.
Right.
But on the perimeter, I make the case that they may have the literal best backcourt in the Olympics with Shea and Jamal Murray. They may have the best backcourt, even over the U.S., whoever the U.S. wants to put out there. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Jamal Murray, that's a pretty dynamic pair. And R.J. Barrett has been terrific. He was great in the Greece game, maybe the most important player for the difference maker for Canada in the Greece opener of their Olympics on Saturday. And he's been really good throughout their pre-Olympic exhibitions as well.
Yeah, and they've got Lou Dort defensively too. But you're right, the size that the French have, with obviously Wembanyama, the Canadians don't have. What can you tell me about the women's side of it and the U.S. women? And I'm assuming they're a prohibitive favorite, even though they don't have Caitlin Clark, which was the big conversation over the last couple of months. But is there a legitimate threat to them taking home gold?
I don't think there is. I don't think there really is that there's anybody at this stage. They would have to play well below their standard. They did not play well in that All-Star game exhibition, the WNBA All-Stars against the Olympic team. I thought they'd take it more seriously than they did. I didn't like that they didn't take it seriously, because I thought it was a good test for them, and they didn't take it seriously, and they got beat pretty decisively. That's probably, if you could put the WNBA All-Stars into the Olympics, that's probably the chief contender that they would have. I don't think they have any threat. But, you know, what's interesting is Dawn Staley was on NBC talking to Mike Tirico yesterday after the men's basketball game.
Yeah,
and what was fascinating was her saying, well, if we had been deciding on the team with this Caitlin Clark, the one that's played the last 6 weeks or so, we might have had a different decision. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why do they have to make the decision so early? It's not like they have any camp or anything. They're playing WNBA ball. They don't have time for a camp. So why do you make the decision so early? And then all of a sudden, maybe you don't take the best team. Caitlin had a chance to play against Diana Taurasi, and look, Diana Taurasi is one of the 3-4 best players in the history of the game. But she's 42 years old. She doesn't need to be on that team. And there would have been value to Caitlin being on that team. I also know there's value to her getting some rest because she's gone almost directly for a full year now. So there is value to that relative to the fever in the WNBA. But there also would have been value for her to get the Olympic experience, to get exposure to it, because in 4 years, she and Angel Reese and others will be important players for the U.S. women's team continuing to own gold.
Yeah, I talked about that Dawn Staley interview earlier. I thought that was interesting as well. Real quickly, because you just wrote about this, 3-on-3 is an Olympic event. Tell me about the U.S. team, or tell all of us about the U.S. team.
Yeah, the U.S. team is basically Jimmer Fredette, Canyon Berry, Kareem Maddox. It's a group of players that they've been together a lot on the FIBA 3x3 circuit. They've been together a lot. They maybe not the most talented 3x3 team we could have sent, although Jimmer would certainly have wanted to have him in there regardless.
How old is he now?
I believe he's 35, I believe, okay. Off the top of my head. It's right around there. And he's still a terrific player. He was retired from international basketball about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago after the pandemic. The pandemic, it was kind of rough because he was in China and they were continuing their league play. And so he had to play through that, couldn't come home. So that was tough. And he decided, you know what, I've done it enough. And then Fran Fraschilla, my friend from ESPN, I've been friends with Fran for 30 years. He is the senior consultant to the 3x3 program, and it was his idea to go get Jimmer to play 3x3. And he told me a lot of people at USA Basketball said, you'll never get him. But it happened that Jimmer retired to Denver, and Fran moved to Colorado Springs after his kids got out of school. And so he and his wife live in Colorado Springs. And so it was just like an hour drive to go up and have lunch with Jimmer and try to talk him into it. And Jimmer, by the end of the lunch, was like, yep, I think I could do this. And so he's played somewhere around 9 or 10 3x3 events and then some international tournaments, like FIBA-type tournaments as well. And the fact that Fran took over the 3x3 program, they did not qualify in 2020 for the 2020 games, because even though they won, my buddy Robbie Hummel and some others won the 3x3 World Championship by a margin that would be about equivalent to a 40-point sweep of the NCAA tournament. That's how badly they dominated. But because the ranking system is so arcane, it's more about how many tournaments you play and not how good you are. They did not qualify. They had to go through a tournament, and they had one bad game, and they got eliminated. So we did not have a team in Tokyo in 2021 in the men's game. And so Fran being in charge, like they papered over all those cracks. They made sure they got in enough tournaments and got enough points. They're worlds ahead of the second place country, so there was never a question that they were going to be in these games.
Man, did Jimmer Fredette have some games at BYU. It seems like forever ago, but he could fill it up, that was for sure. Always enjoy the conversation, Mike. Thanks.
It was my pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
Yep, Mike DeCourcy, everybody. Ben Standing next from Ashburn.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Jumping on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, Bet Smarter, Beat the Books, download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com, is Mike DeCourcy. We love having Mike on, typically to talk college hoops during college hoop season. He is a columnist for Sporting News, a Big Ten Network studio analyst on the Big Ten Network. We watch him all year long as Big Ten basketball fans. And we're not, Mike, having you on to talk about the anticipated big Indiana-USC Big Ten matchup next year, or Maryland-UCLA in a Big Ten matchup. That's going to be tough to get used to. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. But reached out to you to talk some Olympic hoops. I talked about this early in the show. I'm just curious as to what you thought when Jason Tatum was one of two players that didn't see the floor in the U.S. opening win over Serbia.
I wrote in the progress, I think it was during the finals, a column about how he needs to be acknowledged as one of America's great players and one of the world's great players, so one of the league's great players, instead of always picking him apart in the way that he often is by television, not necessarily the game analysts, studio analysts, but the people on the various debate shows and such. And he was a frequent target for them, and he's an extraordinary player. But in the context of this team, it makes sense. He doesn't really work on this team, because for him to be his best, now in 2021, when the U.S. took Kevin Durant, a relatively young team, Dame Lillard, and him, Dame really struggled at those Olympics. He just couldn't find it. And so they needed a secondary scorer, someone to step up when everybody was throwing their D at KD. And he made sense then. But on this team, which really doesn't need to say, okay, hey, Jay, go get us a bucket. They won't. That's not what this team is. I mean, this team has lots of guys who can score and lots of guys who don't need much more than a screen to be super dangerous. As great as Jason is, on this team, he would, and I'd have to look at it, but I'm going to guess he would probably rank as the seventh or eighth most dangerous three-point shooter. And that's not an insult, because the guys you're behind are Tyrese Halliburton and Steph Curry, who's the best shooter of all time, and Drew Holiday, who keeps shooting over 40 no matter what. And so it's not an insult. But
well, he's a better shooter than Drew Holiday.
In reality, I mean, like in these games, he's not, because Drew Holiday has consistently shot above 40%. Now, remember, you don't have to shoot from 23. In these games, I mean, you only have to shoot from about 21. It's a much right. closer shot, and so that makes a difference as well. You don't have to have the kind of range that certain players bring to the game in order to be an exceptional shooter in these Olympics. Yeah, you just have to be able to make a 21 or so foot open shot. And Drew Holiday is—I criticized him yesterday for taking one early in the game while Serbia was on its run. I don't think Drew Holiday should ever be taking a transition three unless it's to take a 12-point lead to 15. It should never be to try to stop a 10-0 Serbia run. So that's not who he is. But at the end of that game yesterday, when they started to get really weary and started to leave guys like Drew open, boom, it started to go in. So I do think that, you know, my wife asked me yesterday at the end of the game, you know, why there was lots of time for that he'd given to Halliburton. She's a Pacers fan. We lived in Indy for 10 years. And I said, the thing is, like, when you're at that point, you don't want to be putting Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton, who are both all NBA, out and told to play in garbage time. It's an insult. It's more of an insult than them not even being on the floor.
You know, this is, he's such an interesting, I mean, if you'd said to me 3 years ago, Jason Tatum is going to be one of those more polarizing and debated players, I would have said, really?
Yeah.
But I've talked a lot about him, and I've kind of been on the side that you identified, which is the picking apart a little bit, maybe too much. Look, he is a multi-time first-team All-NBA player. I always might put it in the context of, if you go back over the last 20 years, you've had to have a debated top five player on your roster to win a title. The 04 Pistons were the last team that didn't right. have a debatable top five player in the league on the roster. So if you don't have one of those players, you're not going to win at all. And I said going into the finals, you could debate that if Boston wins, they've got a top five player, but he wouldn't be in my top five, even though he's been a first-team All-NBA player. Why do you think he gets nitpicked as much as he does?
I think part of it is the fact that he is not what we typically want to see in a elite wing player. Although you'll see him dunk the ball every now and then because of his length, but he's not Dominique Wilkins. He's not flying above the rim to finish plays. That's what we usually expect, Doc.
He's not Anthony Edwards, like from that standpoint, thinking about today's players.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to Dr. J, and like, that's what we want to see in that player, and he's not that. And you know, to me, I look at him and I say, like, of the guys who are not dominant athletes at his position, he may be the most complete player that's ever played. Because it's maybe him and Melo of guys that are at that position in that size range who are not above the rim guys. And, you know, he may debate, like
you
I said.
You kind of put Kawhi into that conversation, too.
Yeah, but I think that's a fair point. Kawhi to me is almost like a power forward who plays at that wing spot. I mean, because he's always had that. So I guess you could put him into that position as well. But, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. And, you know, I think Kawhi didn't get that heat because he was, you know, he was not the primary player, although he became the primary player in the 2014 finals. He was not the glamour player. I mean, they still had Duncan and they still had Tony Parker, et cetera. And then when he won in Toronto, again, there was a lot of talk about other players being more glamorous. So he didn't get the attention. Plus, he was in Canada, which is one of the reasons why, you know, maybe he wasn't talked about as much as on American television as someone like Jason, who plays for one of the two or three showpiece franchises in the league.
Yeah. I certainly think that when they play South Sudan coming up, whatever night that is, tomorrow night or Wednesday night, he's going to play a bunch, don't you?
I don't know. I mean, because, like, they took Tyrese out of the rotation after he struggled he only got 7 minutes against South Sudan the first time around and struggled to guard Carlique Jones. What's interesting is that he played 7 minutes and Carlique Jones still got a triple double. He didn't get it in just 7 minutes. So the guys that came in for him, like Derek White, they struggled just as much defensively with Carlique as Tyrese did, but Tyrese has paid the price for that. He was the hero of the Australia game. And he's never really gotten back into the rotation since South Sudan, and he's sat out now two full games, including the last exhibition, and most of the one before that. So I'm not totally sold that they'll change the rotation to make Jay happy. I think their focus is on winning gold. They have more wings now than when they started because KD is ready to go, obviously, after what he did yesterday. And so I'm not convinced that they will.
Talking to Mike DeCourcy, is Kevin Durant the greatest all-time USA Olympic / international competition player?
Yeah, if they win the gold, it's not even debatable. If they win this gold, it's not even debatable. And part of that is because of what he did in 21. I mean, when a lot of people were saying, man, I don't want to go to Japan and not be able to move around and play in front of nobody. And And he stepped forward and said, no, I'm a baller. I'm playing. And I will respect Kevin. You know, he gets a lot of heat for the whole traded to the Warriors thing. Yep. And how that. But I'm telling you, what he did in 21, I always loved KD as a player. But that was, to me, that should be like the top of his resume now. I played when no one else wanted to, and I won us the gold. Not by himself. Like I said, Jason Tatum was huge in that tournament. Bam Adebayo did some good things. But if there's no KD, they don't even make the medal round. And so if he can follow that up with another gold, then it's beyond doubt.
You know, I love KD too. I think that when it's all said and done, if he doesn't get back to the finals at the very least with whomever he's playing with to finish up his career, he's 35, 36 years old, I think. The moment for him, and I know we're moving away from the Olympic conversation, will be the Milwaukee series when he was in Brooklyn with the toe on the line and a chance to, you know, when he went for 48 and 50 or whatever it was in the last two games or two out of the last three games. That was the opportunity for him to extend away from the shadow of Steph, Clay, Draymond, et cetera, and the Warriors. But he, but he didn't get it done.
Yeah. It didn't, and that's understandable. But he has been, you know, sometimes you're at the mercy of where you get drafted to, and you know, a lot of people criticize LeBron for leaving Cleveland, and I covered all the drafts when LeBron was not always in person, but I was always writing about the draft when LeBron was in his Cleveland years. And, of course, I covered college hoops, so I knew who the guys were that were coming in. And they never did right by him. The Cleveland organization in that period was a disaster.
Right.
So he absolutely had every right to leave. But he's not forgiven for that. Although I certainly don't think he handled it great on the way out the door.
No, he didn't.
Thing. But, I mean, I totally understood. You know, he wanted to work with people who knew what they were doing. So he goes to work for Riles and Spoelstra. Yeah, he got it right.
Although he didn't like Spoelstra to begin with.
Well, Spoelstra then wasn't the guy he is now. I mean, he was still young and hadn't proven himself. And,
right.
And we didn't know at that stage that he would become one of the great coaches in the NBA. He's brilliant. But everybody was skeptical. Like, who is this guy? He hadn't much beyond a... you know, inside the NBA resume, no one knew. But eventually he proved himself with that team, and he's gone on to continue to prove himself as one of the great coaches. He'll probably be the Olympic coach in the next cycle with the way they do it. I'm not a fan of it being a career achievement award for NBA coaches. I don't think that's how it should work. I think that it should either be a college coach or someone that doesn't have any other jobs. I mentioned Jay Wright in the column about a year ago. I think he would be perfect for it, but apparently he doesn't even want to do that. But I think I think that it's hard to be able to coach 100 games in a season and then be ready to be at your tip-top shape in coaching these. Steve Kerr got out-coached in the World Cup last year by the guy at Germany who's never coached anywhere. But he did. He got out-coached in that game. And so I think that, you know, they should be trying to build this program up to what it was when Coach K and Jerry Colangelo were doing it, and I don't see the effort in that regard.
We're talking to Mike DeCourcy at TSN Mike on X on Twitter. You mentioned LeBron. I've talked a lot about this going back to maybe the middle of the season, end of the season, regular season. LeBron at 39 is doing things at a higher level than LeBron at 34. Do you agree? Certainly from a shooting standpoint. He's become a better shooter.
I think he had to in order to continue to be able to succeed, because although he still, as he's shown a few times in these Olympics and the pre-Olympic games, he's still pretty dynamic. He's not what he was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. And so he has to be a better shooter. If he wasn't, he wouldn't be able to average 25 a game, and he probably wouldn't be able to average 7 or 8 assists, et cetera. He gets a lot of that because people have to honor him as a shooter, and then he can see the cutter or the post open or whatever it is when they're running at him. But he had to do that, just as Magic had to do that in order to become one of the four or five greatest players in history. He could have been among the best point guards with just his passing ability. But to stay at the level he wanted to be in the NBA, he had to become a great shooter. Never a pretty shooter, but a great shooter he was, at least a very good one. And that's why he was able to be, you know, one of those guys that you mentioned with Kareem and Magic and Michael and Russ and LeBron, et cetera.
That's why I love talking to you, because Magic Johnson, when they lost to the Celtics in 84 in the seventh game at Boston Garden, they were leaving him open. You know, Magic always had that set shot at 6'9", but he was not a consistent shooter at all, and he just got better. And when they came back and beat the Celtics in 85 and then again in 87, he was just a much better shooter. Yes, awkward, because it was a set shot that Magic shot. But there was no doubt that the 84 finals, and he already had two NBA titles at that point, his rookie year and in 82. But when they lost to the Celtics, it was a lot about his game, his shooting in big spots. People forget about that in talking about Magic Johnson. We are talking to Mike DeCourcy. So, who's the biggest threat to the U.S. on the men's side?
I think it's probably France because of the home crowd and because you've got a nearly impenetrable front line. I think that's a problem. But I think you got to watch out for Canada, too. Canada, it's the opposite, because Canada's front court, their center spot, is not great.
Right.
But on the perimeter, I make the case that they may have the literal best backcourt in the Olympics with Shea and Jamal Murray. They may have the best backcourt, even over the U.S., whoever the U.S. wants to put out there. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Jamal Murray, that's a pretty dynamic pair. And R.J. Barrett has been terrific. He was great in the Greece game, maybe the most important player for the difference maker for Canada in the Greece opener of their Olympics on Saturday. And he's been really good throughout their pre-Olympic exhibitions as well.
Yeah, and they've got Lou Dort defensively too. But you're right, the size that the French have, with obviously Wembanyama, the Canadians don't have. What can you tell me about the women's side of it and the U.S. women? And I'm assuming they're a prohibitive favorite, even though they don't have Caitlin Clark, which was the big conversation over the last couple of months. But is there a legitimate threat to them taking home gold?
I don't think there is. I don't think there really is that there's anybody at this stage. They would have to play well below their standard. They did not play well in that All-Star game exhibition, the WNBA All-Stars against the Olympic team. I thought they'd take it more seriously than they did. I didn't like that they didn't take it seriously, because I thought it was a good test for them, and they didn't take it seriously, and they got beat pretty decisively. That's probably, if you could put the WNBA All-Stars into the Olympics, that's probably the chief contender that they would have. I don't think they have any threat. But, you know, what's interesting is Dawn Staley was on NBC talking to Mike Tirico yesterday after the men's basketball game.
Yeah,
and what was fascinating was her saying, well, if we had been deciding on the team with this Caitlin Clark, the one that's played the last 6 weeks or so, we might have had a different decision. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why do they have to make the decision so early? It's not like they have any camp or anything. They're playing WNBA ball. They don't have time for a camp. So why do you make the decision so early? And then all of a sudden, maybe you don't take the best team. Caitlin had a chance to play against Diana Taurasi. And look, Diana Taurasi is one of the 3-4 best players in the history of the game. But she's 42 years old. She doesn't need to be on that team. And there would have been value to Caitlin being on that team. I also know there's value to her getting some rest, because she's gone almost directly for a full year now. So there is value to that relative to the fever in the WNBA. But there also would have been value for her to get the Olympic experience, to get exposure to it, because in 4 years, she and Angel Reese and others will be important players for the U.S. women's team continuing to own gold.
Yeah, I talked about that Dawn Staley interview earlier. I thought that was interesting as well. Real quickly, because you just wrote about this, 3-on-3 is an Olympic event. Tell me about the U.S. team, or tell all of us about the U.S. team.
Yeah, the U.S. team is basically Jimmer Fredette, Canyon Berry, Kareem Maddox. It's a group of players that that they've been together a lot on the Olympics, or excuse me, on the FIBA 3x3 circuit. They've been together a lot. They maybe not the most talented 3x3 team we could have sent, although Jimmer would certainly have wanted to have him in there regardless.
How old is he now?
I believe he's 35, I believe, okay. Off the top of my head. It's right around there. And he's still a terrific player. He was retired from international basketball about 2 years ago, two, 3 years ago after the pandemic. The pandemic, it was kind of rough because he was in China and they were continuing their league play. And so he had to play through that, couldn't come home. So that was tough. And he decided, you know what, I've done it enough. And then Fran Fraschilla, my friend from ESPN, I've been friends with Fran for 30 years. He is the senior consultant to the 3x3 program, and it was his idea to go get Jimmer to play 3x3. And he told me a lot of people at USA Basketball said, you'll never get him. But it happened that Jimmer retired to Denver, and Fran moved to Colorado Springs after his kids got out of school. And so he and his wife live in Colorado Springs. And so it was just like an hour drive to go up and have lunch with Jimmer and try to talk him into it. And Jimmer, by the end of the lunch, was like, yep, I think I could do this. And so he's played somewhere around 9 or 10 3x3 events and then some international tournaments, like FIBA-type tournaments as well. And the fact that Fran took over the 3x3 program, they did not qualify in 2020 for the 2020 games, because even though they won, my buddy Robbie Hummel and some others won the 3x3 World Championship by a margin that would be about equivalent to a 40-point sweep of the NCAA tournament. That's how badly they dominated. But because the ranking system is so arcane, it's more about how many tournaments you play and not how good you are. They did not qualify. They had to go through a tournament, and they had one bad game, and they got eliminated. So we did not have a team in Tokyo in 2021 in the men's game. And so Fran being in charge, like they papered over all those cracks. They made sure they got in enough tournaments and got enough points. They're worlds ahead of the second place country, so there was never a question that they were going to be in these games.
Man, did Jimmer Fredette have some games at BYU? It seems like forever ago, but he could fill it up. That was for sure. Always enjoy the conversation, Mike. Thanks.
It was my pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
Yep, Mike DeCourcy, everybody. Ben Standing next from Ashburn.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.